From the Rams studio connected by AT&T, welcome back to Between the Horns. I'm Miles Simmons. I'm here with J.B. Long. It's February 8th, and the Rams have a new coaching staff. They've had Sean McVay in place for just under a month now, but now we know all of the names, J.B., that are on the coaching staff roster. I think it's exciting.
It's a feel-good day, right? You kind of come through the dark side of the moon when you have to part ways with your previous staff, and there are a lot of tough conversations, a lot of tough moments in that whole process. And today, when it's finally restocked and you know who's going to be on your sideline come next fall, Everyone is brimming with optimism, and I think there is a lot to be optimistic about this group.
Yeah, I agree with you, JB. You know, we had an opportunity with the full front office staff of the Rams today to go up to Cal Lutheran, hear Sean McVay introduce all of the members of his coaching staff. And I think my biggest takeaway from that was just how excited everybody seems to be there. And, you know, it's sort of easy to say that, of course, when it's day one, you know, and everybody is there and everybody should be excited. But there was really just a good sense of palpable excitement, I felt like. And I think that hopefully will be able to translate, you know, as we go forward here.
Yeah, I want to start by saying congratulations to Shane Waldron, not just because he's a new part of the staff and will coach tight ends, but also because he has an 8-day-old daughter.
Yeah.
So can you imagine the turmoil of being with your spouse and a new baby and a new job?
Yeah.
I've been there semi-recently, so I can relate to what that must have been like for him, but very excited for him. Couple other things that you probably noticed too. Age range, we're talking about anywhere between 24 years old to Wade Phillips at 69 years old. Nice. Combined age of head coach and offensive coordinator, 68 years compared to Wade's 69. So in terms of offensive and defensive side of the ball, we're talking about a pretty wide range, but also a good mix of men who have been to the top, who have Super Bowl rings that they can show us and their players, and a bunch of others who are really hungry to get to that goal.
Yeah, that was one of my big takeaways, too. Just the fact that you've got guys who have been to the top of that mountain, and a few of the assistant coaches today were talking about how there's really nothing like winning a Super Bowl and how that experience can help, you know, this young team and this young head coach and the rest of the staff. I think that's going to be pretty critical, you know, as we go forward here in the next few months. But let's talk about some of these guys. Obviously, Wade Phillips was announced as the defensive coordinator going back into January. So we've known this for a little while, but I think his experience and winning Super Bowls, you know, having so many top 10 defenses and being, you know, the guy who, of course, there was that tweet last week, you know, down there in Houston where it's like, okay, you've got your defensive coordinators on Medicare probably should be, and then your head coach belongs in daycare. I think that kind of balance on the staff, I think that's going to be so valuable.
I'm really looking forward to reading his book, right, about his relationship with his father. And that reminds me that there are also two men who are part of three generations of NFL coaching in Phillips and also Chris Shula, who is part of this new staff as well. So, yes, on the one hand, you have the youngest head coach in NFL history, but you also have other gentlemen who are rich with NFL coaching tradition and have a ton of experience that you can tap into. There's also like a familiarity and a cohesiveness to this group, which I don't know about you, but I wasn't necessarily expecting.
Sure, yeah.
Almost without exception, you can trace each coach either through Tampa Bay or Washington more recently, either through the John Gruden tree or the Mike Shanahan tree.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though there's a good mix of old and new and fresh and experienced, I think there's a unifying force philosophically probably, or at least in terms of common connection, where it's going to be really easy, I think, for these guys to get in their meeting rooms and all start rowing in the right direction.
Right, because a lot of times, you know, if you get guys from who have been on different staffs, part of different philosophies, different this, different that, it takes a little bit of time for you to speak the same language. And I think with what you're saying there is absolutely right. You know, you go into the meeting room now probably, and because all these guys have, you know, worked under a Gruden, whether it's John or Jay, or then you also have the Shanahans there, especially on offense, right? This is a group that will be able to speak the same language, I think, very, very quickly and sort of meld all these systems together. And I think that's something that's very, very positive here going forward, because you need that. Everybody's got to be rowing in the same direction, so to speak.
Yeah, no more so the case than probably with the relationship between McVay and his offensive coordinator, Matt LaFleur, probably the last official major hire to be announced because he was obviously occupied until this past weekend. But I think it was a conscious decision to, instead of going out and making a huge name splash hire with an offensive coordinator, North Turner is a name that you and I have put out there just as an example. I think McVay made a conscious effort to say, let's put the system in place that we had that worked well with Kirk Cousins in Washington. Let's bring that and just have that consistency and that formula so that we can connect with Jared Goff on that level too, and that I'm speaking the same language as my right hand, and that's going to be able to allow me to be more efficient, more effective, and then teaching this offensive this offense and the offensive players.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. You know, LaFleur is just coming off of this devastating loss with the Atlanta Falcons where he was quarterback's coach, and we'll talk about the Super Bowl later, but I think we can all say, you know, whether Kyle Shanahan obviously has gotten a ton of credit for Matt Ryan's MVP season this year.
Who chose not to hire an offensive coordinator in San Francisco, by the way.
Which is very interesting.
By way of another example of how a young coach first time might go about it. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, but, you know, the other thing about hiring an offensive coordinator when you are young and when you are going to be the play caller as the head coach, that's going to be a little bit more difficult because you either have got to kind of get a guy who is maybe on a downturn, I guess you might want to say, of his career, if he's really old, or if he's older. Or you get somebody who's younger and on the upswing and who may not have the experience calling plays, but this is still a step up. And I think that's what we're seeing right here with LaFleur, right? You know, he was not the play caller there in Atlanta. That obviously was Kyle Shanahan, but now he is going to have more responsibilities with Sean McVay. And I think the other thing that's really good about this is they already have a good established friendship and a good established relationship because the two worked together in Washington. That's when Mike Shanahan was the head coach there. I think LaFleur was there from 2010 to 2013. Obviously, McVay was also the tight ends coach there. So these things are good and positive where you have these pre-existing relationships and your philosophy is basically already there and already the same.
Which is not to say that McVay at some point in the near future or long term can't work with a veteran offensive mind, right?
Sure.
We heard a lot of great stories about how he and Bill Callahan worked together in the film room in Washington. So if there comes a time where McVay wants to be more of a CEO-style head coach or whatever, maybe he does tap into an older offensive mind, or maybe by then he's groomed LaFleur or whoever to be offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and that's the one of the things that I also like about this staff is that it appears to be a staff that can stay together for a while. You know, this staff in Atlanta, they're going through basically a ton of changes, and they were so close to being the best team in the National Football League by virtue of winning the Super Bowl. And so now, you know, I don't want to call it like decimated, but their offensive staff, a lot of people are gone. Now they have hired Steve Sarkisian to be their new offensive coordinator. But, you know, a lot of the architects of that offense are going to be elsewhere. Kyle Shanahan's going to be elsewhere. Matt LaFleur is going to be, you know, in Los Angeles with the Rams. So undergoing a lot of those changes, how does that affect the Atlanta Falcons going forward? That remains to be seen. But as it relates to the Los Angeles Rams, you know, you've got two coordinators who, one of them is 37, and that is going to be LaFleur, right? He's, you know, coming off a good season, obviously, as quarterbacks coach in Atlanta. And then you've also got a guy in Wade Phillips who has been around this league for a really long time. He's had the head coaching experiences, but, you know, at the age of 69, this may be one of his last stops in the NFL. So I think from that standpoint, you're setting yourself up for success because these are two coordinators that can be in place for a while and that can implement a program. And you want that if you're going to be in the National Football League because I think the most successful teams are the ones that have programs, right? You know, the Patriots, their offensive system is a program. They can get people to get in there, plug and play, blah, 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 because they've had this offensive system for years and years and years. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are another really good example of this. You know, they've been running their 3-4 for however many years. Dick LeBeau leaves. It's the same under their new defensive coordinator, whose name escapes me at this point in time, but it used to be their linebackers coach. But I think the point is that once you build that program, that's where you're going to have success.
Yeah, The stability is great when you have turnover. You want it to be the right kind of turnover because you're having so much success that other people are coming to pillage your staff and give them promotions. But I think part of the reason, and you can speak to this as well, why you might feel like this staff has long-term potential is because I think McVay got more of his first choices mm-hmm. than he expected, than maybe the front office expected, than anyone could have expected. I don't know if you remember, there was a teleconference with Chip Kelly when we played the 49ers late in the year.
Yes.
He was asked about the challenges of whoever gets hired to be the Rams coach. And the number one thing he pointed to, I wrote this down because it stuck out in my mind, he said, one of the toughest things to do is to get a staff together because the only people available to you are guys that are out of work in the NFL or college coaches. Mm-hmm. It struck me for two reasons. What, like, well, aren't you kind of throwing your current staff under the bus? Like maybe, gosh, I would have loved to have hired so-and-so.
Maybe you had a little inkling of what was coming at that point, huh?
But then also, you know, when we sat in this room and spoke with Kevin Demoff, there was, when you had these interviews, yes, everyone pitches their blueprint for building their team, their roster, their organization, and then also the coaching staff. It's, hey, I think if you hire me, I can go out and get Wade Phillips to be my defensive coordinator,
yes.
fill in the blank.
Right.
But until you actually get that job and until you hear what certain individual status is with their own organization, you don't know if that's going to be available to you, at least in year one.
Right.
And so, you know, you hope that you have enough success to get to year three and year four, and maybe by then you're able to get guys who are coming off a contract to mm-hmm. come and join your staff. Time will tell, but it does feel like listening to Sean talk today, his exact quote to us was, this staff is even better than I could have expected.
Yes.
And I think that's reflected by the fact that when he envisioned who he might be able to hire to join him in Los Angeles, he hit on a lot of those candidates.
Yeah. And so a lot of these assistant coaches either have experience that exceeds their position right now, and I'm thinking of guys in particular like your quarterback's coach, Greg Olsen,
yeah.
and then your assistant head coach, linebacker's coach,
yeah.
Joe Barry.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I think both of those guys, you know, they have been coordinators in the past and may not have had the kind of success that you would envision as mm-hmm. a coordinator. But at the same time, once you get that experience, I think that can only help you as a position coach. And then, obviously, you know, with McVay being a young head coach, I think all of that experience can only help him as well. But with Olsen in particular, I think this is a good, strong hire, you know, as the quarterback's coach for Jared Goff, because he is someone who has had a lot of success in the NFL as a coordinator, and even with the Rams organization. Mm-hmm. If you go back to 2006, the Rams became the fourth team in NFL history to have a passer over 4,000 yards, a running back with over 1,500 rushing yards, and then two wide receivers over 1,000 yards mm-hmm. receiving. So that's something there, you know, and that's not nothing. Now, when you go and you look at what has happened with the Jacksonville Jaguars, where Olsen was the last couple of years, obviously there's not as much success there, but you can still look at the 2015 season for Blake Bortles. There was some really good things there. And so if you can get that kind of system and that kind of experience in the room with a Jared Goff, and you combine that with what you've got with McVay and the success he had with Cousins and with LaFleur and the success that he had this year with Matt Ryan, man, that's a lot of good coaching experience that is in the room that can help your number one overall pick.
Yeah. And I thought of something as you were kind of breaking that down, which is, I think a lot of times we can make the mistake of, if I hire Coach X, that will translate into a certain number of wins, right?
Sure.
Based on, like,
yes.
if you can't win football games just by hiring the right names. I mean, I think today,
that
part of today's
true.
Takeaway
man,
is in a very intense way, the success of the Rams next season will be dictated by the work that is already underway at Cal Lutheran. Like this week, they got into film to evaluate every single player on their current roster and then contrast that with who might be available in free agency in the draft. And I feel, yes, Wade Phillips is a phenomenal name, and I think he'll give the Rams and Coach McVay his best. But everyone in the NFL comes highly recommended.
True.
Everyone has a credential or multiple credentials that make them feel like the right candidate for the job. because it's so competitive and there are so many, only so many opportunities. Mm-hmm. Every staff, whether it's in San Francisco or Buffalo or San Diego / Los Angeles, I mean, everyone feels good about their staff when they're hired, just like every college coach feels good about his recruiting
right.
class.
Right, and if you don't feel good about the staff you've hired and you're saying that publicly, that means you have a whole right. another set of problems. So, yeah, it's...
But yes. I think the Los Angeles Rams have every right to feel like they've hired the best staff of the new staffs across the NFL.
I agree.
But that being said, it's about the work from, say, yesterday through week one of the preseason, through week one of the regular season, right. through week 17,
right.
that will ultimately dictate wins and losses.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's nice to win the offseason, so to speak. But, you know, winning the offseason, I mean, as you were just saying, it doesn't really yeah. win you games. And so now you're right. It's about, okay, what can all these men bring to the table that you say, okay, this is how I feel we can best utilize this talent to win more games. And there's a lot of excitement there. I mean, just based on hearing these guys talk today about where they feel the Rams can go. And so I think one of the things that, you know, gets brought up a lot, especially with Wade Phillips now as the defensive coordinator, is this kind of potential switch to the 3-4 defense. What does that mean for the Los Angeles Rams? And, you know, here's the thing about Wade Phillips. He has a long history of matching the personnel to the scheme as opposed mm-hmm. to, you know, trying to fit square pegs into round holes. And I think that's something that is really positive, and we're going to be able to see that implemented.
The good news is he has Aaron Donald,
right.
who could play three technique, he could play outside linebacker, he could play corner.
He probably could, honestly.
So I wouldn't worry about him.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that also got brought up, you know, I think I might have read this quote last podcast we did with DeMarco, but I think it's still very important. And it's something that Wade Phillips said in the run-up to Super Bowl 50 last year. Obviously, the Broncos won that when he was the defensive coordinator. And he was talking about, you know, his general defensive philosophy. And he said, this is via the Denver Post, he says, "We try to fit what the players can do in the defense rather than saying, okay, we're a 4-3 or we're a 2-gap 3-4. We're a team where if a guy can stunt and rush the passer, we let him do that. If a guy is a power guy, we try to let him be that. It's all what individual players can do." And so that's why I think when Sean McVay says, you know, day of his introductory press conference and his interview with Danny, you know, that Aaron Donald is going to continue to be a three technique because mm-hmm. why would you move the best three technique in the game out of being a three technique? He's serious. And I think he brought in somebody who can help implement that and can build a defensive scheme kind of around sure. potentially the best defensive tackle in the league.
And yes, we describe it as a 3-4 because it deals with the front of your defense, uh-huh. but a lot of times the decisions that are made are impacted by the back end of your defense.
Also true.
And in Denver, they had three all-pro defensive backs. So
that's
until
true.
The Rams roster can boast the same thing, strategically up front, they might look a little bit different
yeah.
than Denver, even though they just hired Denver's defensive coordinator.
And I think you have to expect that they would look different, yeah. right? I mean, it's just it's different personnel, right? You don't have, I mean, Trumaine Johnson is a pending free agent, right? You know, you also have got a guy, T.J. McDonald, that's two-fourths mm-hmm. of your so-called starting backfield, or two-fifths if you want to include LaMarcus Joyner in that, and we probably should because he was a starter
yep.
last year. That's two-fifths in the significant part of your defensive backfield that are pending free agents. So it's something that they're going to have to deal with. You know, I've seen reports out there that say, you know, Trumaine Johnson is a really, really good fit for Wade Phillips' scheme. And there are only so many good cover corners in this league right now, I think, mm-hmm. that you can put on the outside and say, hey, we trust you to go one-on-one with this top-flight wide receiver. I think we've seen Trumaine Johnson as that kind of potential. So we will see, you know, how these things work out in free agency, but I think getting arguably the best defensive coordinator in the game to be the defensive coordinator in LA, like that cannot hurt that cause.
No, but I think that's another intriguing portion of changing a coaching staff is getting the opinions and whether they're stated or whether they're inferred based on the decisions that are made in the offseason in
sure.
terms of playing time. What does the new coach at corner or at linebacker or at defensive line or at offensive line think about the players that played for the Rams in 2016?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the litmus test.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of incoming position coaches that will have to make some decisions, that will have to implement their style and their system and then feed up the food chain hey, I think I can do it with this guy, or hey, I need help with this position and we need to go find somebody who might be better.
Yeah, so let's stay here for a second. I mean, who are maybe one or two position coaches that you feel like maybe have a really great situation walking in? You know, you're walking in licking your chops, and then maybe someone on the opposite side who is, man, you know, we got work to do here.
Best situation also got the biggest ovation today, and that would be Bones Fossil.
Yeah.
Right? One of the men who was retained from Jeff Fisher's staff. It was a really warm, I thought, moment when he was introduced as part of the new staff, but obviously someone who's familiar to all of us and very deserving. He said he didn't want to have to go anywhere else, and he was very thankful and appreciative for the opportunity to come back to LA. So, outside of special teams, you know, because I think he has the best, most stable position.
Probably.
I would probably say defensive line coach Bill Johnson, who also, by the way, might be the biggest character. he's a good old Southern boy. His son Billy has already been on staff here in the personnel department in Los Angeles, but Bill, the father, kind of said that this is legitimately his first time out of the South. That to him previously, what do you say, L.A. meant Little Arkansas.
Yeah, Lower Arkansas.
but I think you have to feel good about his position group, even if you're taking Robert Quinn out of it and putting him with linebackers. You know, however you want to delineate that. But almost all of the contributors from a very strong unit are either back or under team control for next season if they choose to exercise it. So, even if he's adjusting scheme, going from 4-3 to 3-4, I really like the situation he's walking
into. Yeah, I would agree with you there, JB. And I think, you know, it's for a couple of reasons. I think, you know, being able to coach on the team where your son also works, I think that's really special. And I think that's really cool that, you know, the Johnson family will get to share that. But, you know, obviously, anytime you're walking into a situation and you've got Aaron Donald, you know, and it makes it really a lot easier, you know, and also, but it's not just him. You know, you've got guys like a Michael Brockers who has shown that he can be a good player in this league, especially with what he does. You know, he's not necessarily asked to do the pass rushing aspects, but I think we've seen Brockers can take up those double teams, you know, at the line of scrimmage. He can play the run very well. And if there's an opportunity where he can get a sack, hey, maybe he does that as well. But, you know, you also have William Hayes, who I think has done a really nice job the past couple years as a starter. Eugene Sims on the outside, and we can continue to go through these names. But that, yes, that's a very, very solid situation there at defensive
line. How about on the other side of the equation? Who has the most work to do, say, between now and whether it's draft or training camp or week one?
You know, you could kind of maybe take your pick on the offensive side of the ball. I think probably Eric Yarber, you know, is the new wide receivers coach. He's somebody that's sticking around LA. He's coming from UCLA, where he had the same position there under Jim Mora. But obviously, the Rams wide receiving core last year was not good. I mean, you had a plethora of drops, you know, all the time. And while Kenny Britt did have a career season, you know, heading into free agent year, and he had the first Rams 1,000 yards receiving season since 2007 when Torrey Holt did it, there are a number of problems, I think we can say, that came through from the wide receiver position. And, you know, whether that's a matter of talent, whether it was scheme, whether it was coaching at that position, I think we'll maybe get to see that as things go along in these next few months.
It's a good answer. I'd probably go with new offensive line coach Aaron Cromer in terms of having the most work to do.
Yeah.
Only because there's a chance that none of the five starters in week one of next season will have played that same position or be the same name as we finished week 17 with in last season. Again, here's another example of the point I made previously. What does this staff feel about certain individual players, their roles in this organization long term? They get to answer the Greg Robinson question, right?
Yeah.
Is there a new center in Los Angeles next year?
Yeah.
Did Havenstein have a sophomore slump, or is that a longer term issue at right tackle? Right guard, it was kind of a rotating cast of characters. Do you still try and solve it by volume? Do you pin one down? Do you go out and look for another option? So, you know, the good news is Cromer comes with a reputation of having the top yards per carry in the running game for his two seasons in Buffalo. To my knowledge, Shady McCoy is not coming with him to Los Angeles. Unfortunately, that might help in that regard. But I think it all kind of starts with his position group, because it's no matter what, it's going to look different next season right. because of how heavily they've invested in it, you know, in two of the last 3 years.
Well, right, and based on the performance, I mean, it has to look different, mm-hmm. right? You know, I mean, you had your quarterback, your number one overall pick, get sacked 7 times in the last game of the season.
Was it only 7?
It was only 7.
Felt like
it
17.
Felt like, I know, it felt like more, but it seemed like every 5 yeah. seconds I was tweeting, Jared Goff is sacked. You know, for an X amount of yard loss, and that was such a problem that they brought in Sean Mannion to come in and get some snaps right. because you're just beating up this guy, and mm-hmm. that is not what you want going forward. So, again, yes, things have got to change at the offensive line position, but I think what they've done is brought in somebody who has a strong reputation and has shown that he can do things that are, you know, that can really bring guys up. At that position. I mean, he's got Super Bowl winning experience as well, having been at that position in New Orleans and won a Super Bowl yep. there and before he went to Buffalo under Rex Ryan. So, again, that's why I think, you know, when we talk about McVay getting a lot of guys who were probably his first choice, I think this is one of them because of all of that success that he's had mm-hmm. and all of the things that he can bring to L.A.
I think he's going to really empower those assistant coaches, too, because, one, he feels good about them, and, two, I think that's part of his management philosophy is, you know, I'm not sure if this is the exact terminology he used, but when he interviewed and hired coaches, his approach is, you don't have the opportunity to come work for me. You have an opportunity to come work with me and yes. help me achieve the goal that I want for my team and for the Los Angeles franchise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what every prospective hire wants to hear, I think.
Sure.
And it sounds like... he's going to really groom and make these assistant coaches available and give them some autonomy because he trusts who they are and their backgrounds and what they can offer their position groups.
Yeah, one of the guys that is also going to be sticking around aside from Fossil is running backs coach Skip yeah. Pete. And, you know, you and I were talking about this before. It was a good anecdote that McVay brought up in the meeting that he had with the front office staff about, you know, retaining Skip.
You go ahead.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, yeah. he talked about... he was saying that, you know, before the night before or the day before he was going to meet with Pete to, right. to sort of interview him, he got a call from Todd Gurley. And Todd Gurley said, you know, I would really love to have the opportunity to continue working under Skip Pete. And he said that, you know, that... McVay said that that wasn't everything, but it definitely meant something mm-hmm. that, you know, the running back that was basically was supposed to be the star running back of this team would reach out like that and really want to have Pete come back and continue working under him. That means something to me.
Given the low retention percentage from staff to staff mm-hmm. and given how mightily Todd struggled in that position group, you would say the running game, I think it's a question that's out there for our fan base and for our audience
sure.
is – wait a second, changing staff but retaining a leader of a group that struggled doesn't necessarily jive. But look, mm-hmm. I don't think Skip needs to justify his existence. He's got a much longer track record than,
yes.
than 2016 in the Rams running game. But I do think that call and that anecdote is meaningful for a lot of reasons. One, it says to me that Todd felt strongly enough to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And he had already had his conversation with Sean, like kind of a welcome to the team, here's what we're going to do.
Right.
But he kind of thought back and said, hey, what McVay's probably doing now is hiring my position coach, and I want to make sure that Skip Pete isn't taking the fall for something that maybe I didn't do or
right.
that my offense didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make sure that I go to bat for him. I like that a lot.
To me,
that's really encouraging. It says a lot about Todd, who he is as a person, and what his mentality is going into next season.
Well, and it's him growing as a leader as well, I think. You know, he was voted captain of this team, and I think it might have taken him a little bit of time to kind of grow into that mm-hmm. captain role as the year went on. I think he did. You know, there were times where after the game, over the course of the year, I think, after the game, he kind of softened maybe his stance mm-hmm. with the media and was a little bit more open and honest. And, you know, sometimes that produced headlines. And I think as a captain and as somebody who is well-known across this league after winning 2015 Offensive Rookie of the Year, it's something he might have taken a little bit longer to embrace than, I don't know, he might have taken a little while to embrace it, but I think he did embrace it. And I think him going forward, now that's going to be a really significant part of this offense. And if the Rams can run the ball effectively, then obviously that's going to help your young quarterback too. So that's always been the idea, mm-hmm. you know, and the philosophy behind both drafting him, helping a young quarterback, and then, of course, drafting Jared Goff last year. But if these kinds of things can continue from Todd Gurley, I think it's a good sign of leadership.
The way the coaches today and McVay have spoken publicly about some of the key pieces of the existing roster, and I don't think this is just blowing smoke. I don't think this is, hey, I need to cater to Jared or Todd or Alec or whomever and kind of make sure that they know that I have their back. A lot of times when coaching changes happen, there are open competitions.
Yes.
And you'd like to think that in the NFL, every day at practice is an open competition, but that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. So do I think there will be opportunities for other running backs to get work this year and other receivers and maybe not quarterbacks? Yeah, sure. Right. There's always that opportunity. But I also think the way that the coaches have spoken, they are genuinely more optimistic about what's currently in place than maybe some other corners of the fan base might be.
I would agree with that assessment, because it's not like it's not like you're hearing Sean McVay say this publicly, you know, oh, everything is open, you know, we're going to do XYZ. And right. I think maybe fans,
which some new coaches do take that approach.
Yeah. Yep. And I think sometimes maybe fans will want to hear that, especially after you go 4-12.
And maybe behind closed doors, they are saying that to
right.
the players.
But yes. But, and I think that, you know, if you don't perform, you're not going to be playing, right? I think that's fair to say, especially anytime you have a new coaching staff. You know, that's something the departed defensive coordinator Greg Williams always says, is every day is an interview, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think that is going to be true, especially under a new coaching staff. But I think you're right too, JB, in that, you know, what assistants and what McVay has been saying publicly is that, look, we are excited about the talent that is here. And so how they will then utilize that talent, how they will be teachers and implement their systems, that's going to be interesting to see, you know, how much they can really get out of this. Because let's be honest, the Rams don't have a first-round pick. Now, they do have and will probably have a full slate of draft picks. They're expecting no fewer than 8 draft picks after the compensatory picks come through, mm-hmm. and that'll happen at the owners' meeting in March. But at the same time, when you don't have that premium first-round pick that would be, I think, you know, number 5 overall this year, that's something that, you know, you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah, $40 million of free agency money, roughly, give or take,
yeah.
and 8 draft picks is not enough to turn an entire roster, even if you wanted to.
No.
So I think the point that you and I are both making is, regardless of their public statements, regardless of their private sentiments, the challenge for this coaching staff is to do more, do better with the players they are inheriting than last year's group did.
Yes.
Simple as that.
Yeah, and I think that's a decent expectation,
yeah.
right? I mean, you know, this is a team that was 3-1 to begin the year, you know? They beat Seattle at home.
That was last year? 3-1, huh?
3-1. Yeah, and then you basically go through 3 straight months of losing, and the only game that the Rams won was 9-6.
Just because it feels like it was so long since
I know,
since we
it
took
feels
that
like I know.
Tampa, but yeah.
I know. But yeah, isn't that interesting how that's the way the season started? But, you know, I guess, you know, you look at it and you look at the season and, you know, to summarize it, you know, the team was probably closer to the one that lost 28-0 to the 49ers at Monday Night Football to start the year than they were the team that went down to Arizona and won, that went into Tampa Bay and won. And it's unfortunate that it turned out like mm-hmm. that. But now, you know, you have the new coaching staff and you have all this positivity that comes from that. And so, you know, heck, you know, in a couple seasons, the Rams are consistent playoff contenders. Maybe, you know, it's like the John Fossil brought this up in one of his late press conferences, the parable of the stone cutter, right? You know, where the stone cutter's hammering that stone and nothing's happening. It looks like nothing's happening for, I don't know, however many times he's hitting that stone. And then obviously, you know, on whatever it is, the 150th time he hits the thing, it breaks, it splits in half, and it's perfect. And the point he was making there is everything you've done up to that point got you to that point. It wasn't just the 150th time mm-hmm. you hit that hammer. Every little thing mattered. So I think he's right in that. All the experiences shape you to be who you are. And so hopefully by going through what this season was in 2016, the Rams will be better for it.
You're never as good as you think you are in this league. Just ask the Carolina Panthers. and you're never as bad as maybe the public says you are.
Yeah.
And my kind of go-to line on this ever since whatever December, January has been, even with the existing roster going, the whole season going exactly the way it went, the move, the transition, everything, if the Rams just cash in their 10-point leads against playoff-caliber New York Giants, against playoff-caliber Miami, against not playoff-caliber San Francisco,
right?
It doesn't look as bad as 4-12.
It really doesn't. Yeah. No. So, I mean, we haven't really had a chance to talk since McVay got hired. You haven't been here on the podcast, but what have just your impressions been of him overall in the time that he's been here?
Well, once you're in the same room as him, you can understand why management hired him after being in the same room as him. He does a tremendous job in that regard. And the other thing that I'll say based on today's observation is hearing his staff members now speak of him. Granted, he's their boss. They need to speak glowingly about him. but kind of reading deeper than just their comments, I didn't sense that anyone on staff today looked at Sean McVay as the youngest coach in NFL history, as a 30-year-old plus 1 month or not even, not fully. I think they look at him with sincere respect, high regard. I think his philosophy of we, not me, they've bought into that. Yeah. And I think in turn the players will. So, look, it all sounds good in February. I get it. It all could change when you suffer your first loss.
Yep.
But I think what Sean is preaching is a culture of it's not going to change when we take our first loss.
Right.
It's not going to take a turn for the worse when we hit a rough patch. And, you know, I think in terms of engaging personalities, in terms of developing relationships, in terms of being the CEO that is required of an NFL head coach, I think he's got it all. I think the one thing that McVay will have to be cautioned against, either by himself or by his advisors, is don't try and please everybody. It's okay now to try and be winning the room and winning the staff and winning the media and doing all the interviews you can. Sooner or later, there will come a time where I think he does probably need to draw some boundaries, right? And he'll probably have to learn when to say yes and when to say no, like all coaches do.
Yeah.
Because I think his natural inclination is, absolutely, we can do that. Yes, I can do that. I don't want to disappoint you. I want to make sure that you feel involved. And it's too much for one person to do that and then also coach a championship football team.
Maybe
he would disagree, but in my experience, that's the case.
No, and I would agree with you. And I think one of the best impression I think I've got of him is this, what you just brought up, is the we, not me. You know, it's all very collective.
And you're going to hear a lot of that, trust
yes,
us.
Yeah, it's this, just the way he keeps talking about it. But I think he's trying to drive that home, that everything is a collective. And, you know, when he talked about, you know, you're not working for me, you're working with me. Mm-hmm. We're all working with each other. We all have a part of this, and we all are working together to become a world champion and one of the teams that the other 31 teams in the league respect and then try to take things away from and implement because they see what's going on and they want to, and they know that this is a successful program. And so that's one of the things I like too, is that it's not just about building a team, you know, a team that can win a championship. It's about, to me, building a program. And this we, not me philosophy is one of the foundations of that, you know, can then, you know, be applied to basically everything that is going to happen with this team. You know, it's not just about the quarterback. It's not just about the running back. It's about the offense as a collective. And it's not just about offense, defense, or special teams. It's about everybody as a collective working, pushing, pulling in all the same directions so that they can go out and win games consistently.
Again, I think it's everything you want to hear about a new hire, right?
In it terms is.
Of coming in and setting a management culture, and it's no better, worse, different than the prior regime. You know, I think we, again, need to set that forth. But in terms of relating to today's professional athletes, I think the days of being a hardliner and being a disciplinarian are probably getting fewer and far between. Mm-hmm. If you're Bill Belichick and you got the rings to back it up and you want a my way or the highway organization,
you can do it because you're BB.
Yeah, then fine. But I think Sean has an interpersonal skill that is very much about, I'm going to make sure that before we ever set foot on the football field, you know that I want what's best for you.
Yeah.
And trust me, that's also going to be best for the Rams.
Right.
And so I'm going to establish that and foster that and nurture that. And then once we get that in place, we're going to start talking football in a big way, and we're going to make you a better football player. But I need you to trust me that I'm not just a 31-year-old coach with a lot of, you know, really revolutionary offensive ideas. Trust me on this.
Right.
He's going to say, hey, I want to make sure that each day I'm making you, I'm putting you in a better position to succeed. And then once we've got that established, forget about you and let's make sure that it benefits the group.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one quote that I know people have said this all the time, but I remember talking to Dick Vermeil about this once, and he said, players don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah, that's
and
exactly.
And I think that's, you know, what Sean McVay is going to implement, because he's going to be able to care about the person, and he's good, and I think he's got those interpersonal skills that you were talking about, that he can communicate how much he cares about the individual and how much he wants that person to succeed and how he is going to do his best to put them in the best position to succeed.
And you and I can vouch for this. Jeff Fisher did too.
Yes.
Jeff Fisher had wonderful relationships with the players
Absolutely.
Who played for him. Now, because it didn't work out in the win-loss column, there's a new voice, there's a new approach. But I think if there's a similarity between McVay and Fisher, and we've all kind of delineated the differences between the two, I think that's a commonality, is the relationship that they'll have with the people who work for them and then the people who play for them.
And I think that's really important, because, you know, sometimes people want to say, oh my gosh, you know, they had a player's coach, they need to do a 180 with that, get a disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. But I think what you said about, you know, the days of the disciplinarians or whatnot, I agree, because if people want to say, oh my gosh, Bill Belichick is the greatest head coach ever, is that really more about Bill Belichick being a disciplinarian, or is that just about the individual? Because there have been plenty of people who have, you know, come up under Bill Belichick and have tried to then go and be Bill Belichick, and then they are not successful, mm-hmm. right? We've seen this come out of New England all the time. And I think maybe Bill O'Brien is one of those guys who went to Penn State, had some success there, realized he can be his own guy, and then he's having some success in Houston as well. And he's been really one of the only guys that has come out of that Bill Belichick coaching tree and then has had some modicum of success that has been a little bit sustained. So, again, I think it's important that we concentrate on the individual and how that individual head coach can implement a program, rather than saying, no, we got to try to imitate Belichick. You're not. Yeah. It's not happening.
Do you like being yelled at?
No.
I don't do very well being yelled at. I can take criticism when it comes from a trustworthy source who I know has my best interest in mind. But I almost said our generation doesn't necessarily respond to the yelling and the screaming. But then I remembered that the players in the NFL currently, maybe Tom Brady aside, are not our generation anymore. They're decade behind us.
I mean, they're my generation.
Okay, fine. But in a lot of other sports that I cover and other leagues that I've been a part of, I've found more and more the leaders who can relate to players personally and convey a trust that they have their best interests in mind tend to communicate their philosophies and get more out of those players athletically.
Yeah. And it's all about, can you do that in your way? Are you your own guy, and can you do that in your way that is not necessarily you imitating somebody else? Because players can also always determine authenticity and how genuine you are. So if you're trying to be somebody else, they're going to figure that out. You have to develop your own philosophy, and it can be you can pull different parts from different people, but at the end of the day, you got to be your own guy. And I think, from what we see, you know, everybody says, oh my gosh, you know, this reminds me of a young John Gruden, right? But I think there's still going to be things that are going to be uniquely Sean McVay. And hopefully, they're very positive and they come out into wins for the Rams franchise.
I think that's well said.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl, because it was one of the most unbelievable games that I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, when Tom Brady throws a pick six, and it turns to 21-0. I mean, I remember the graphic coming up on the Fox screen. It was like, no team has ever won a Super Bowl after being down 14. So that's let alone 21. And so, you know, you ever see the old Dave Chappelle skit where it's like Prince, and then like they're playing basketball and this is game losses. Like, I turned to the people I was watching the Super Bowl with, and once that pick six happened, I was like, game losses.
Especially because it was Tom like going belly to the turf to try and make the tackle, and it was like, okay, maybe that right there is the end of,
Did you see this, the early edition of the Globe that got sent to Florida where it was, you know, they had this picture.
No way.
And it said, yeah, it said a bitter end. And it's the picture of Tom Brady, like, as the pick six is going on. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, because of
course. So you have that on one end and then Tom taping a commercial pre-Super Bowl where he's already got the fifth ring in his pocket.
Yeah. It's pretty great. It's pretty funny.
That's priceless. But
The fact that, you know, you get the comeback from Brady, from Belichick, I mean, it cements them as the greatest ever, doesn't it?
In my mind, it does. And especially Tom, because, you know, his Hall of Fame career, I don't think, has been surrounded by as many Hall of Fame offensive pieces, especially at the skill positions, as maybe some others. Like, I grew up kind of in the Joe Montana era, and, you know, whether it's Jerry Rice or John Taylor or Roger Craig, I mean, there are a lot of incredible pieces that were part of those Super Bowl runs.
Yeah.
Take Gronk out of it. Gronk, I think, will be one of, if not the best tight ends ever to play when all said and done. But he didn't have Gronk for the first phase of their reign. And Randy Moss, for one little cup of coffee there. And believe me, he was helpful, but he wasn't.
They didn't win the Super Bowl in 07 with Randy Moss, even as great as that season was. They did not win the Super Bowl then.
So I think the cast of characters that they have been able to succeed with, you know, even to the extent of Tom needing to or choosing to throw touchdowns to Mike Vrabel in Super Bowl moments, to me, you know, it's almost like the coach of the year tends to go to the coach who did the most with what we perceive to be the least.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that Tom Brady and the Patriots have done the most with the least, but I think offensively there's a case to be made that among the all-time greats, he has done the most in terms of statistics and wins and rings with an offensive cast of characters that maybe is not Hall of Fame caliber.
Well, especially, I mean, I remember saying this to DeMarco after the Rams played the Patriots, and they didn't have Gronk. And I remember thinking, man, it's going to be really interesting to see how they do offensively down the stretch of the year because they don't have Gronkowski.
Mm-hmm.
And it obviously changed their offense a lot because, I mean, for almost 3.5 quarters, they looked really lost on offense. Really lost. I mean, you rarely see Tom Brady throw a pass into coverage like he did that ended up with the pick six. And, you know, for them to make the adjustments, to keep coming at it, and then get the touchdown, 2 point. You need another touchdown, you get another 2 point. Like, that's really, some coaches would say that's 4 scores. That's really, really, really hard to do. And so for them to do that, man, that's really special.
A few other Super Bowl thoughts that I want to run past you and interrupt me whenever you want to jump in and take one individual. Julio Jones may be the best catch in Super Bowl history. I know David Tyree is right there.
One of
the most incredible catches I have ever seen that will forever be lost in the shuffle of that comeback.
Yes.
Dan Quinn should have 2 Super Bowl rings. He has 0. And while this one, you know, is certainly under his purview as now a head coach, you could argue that both of them, both rings were compromised by offensive coordinator's judgment in the key moment, whether it's Seattle or this year. And then lastly, just beyond the Super Bowl, how about the run of recent major championships we've been treated to, going back to March Madness of last year?
Yeah.
And Villanova, and then
Cavs.
The Cavs from down 3-1 against the Warriors. You won't be as happy about this one, but then the Cubs from down 3-1,
game seven, extra innings. I mean, here's the thing, and this has not gotten brought up as much. Because I think, at least, you know, that game went to extra innings. And it was one of the great Game 7s of World Series history. So, for some reason, people don't bring it up as much, which I'm totally cool with.
And then the college football championship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, not just the game-winning touchdown with 1 second left, but Clemson was down multiple scores going into that fourth quarter as well. So, all of these really major sports moments within the last 12 months that were either unprecedented comebacks and or last second miracle finishes.
Yeah.
I can confidently say we will never have a run of this kind of around the calendar where every single one you could make the case was one of, if not the best we've ever seen.
I agree. And so with this, was this about Atlanta's failures?
Yes.
Or New England's triumph?
Yes.
I agree. Totally agree. Because you can't have one without the other.
No.
Unfortunately. I mean, if, you know, Atlanta runs the ball and then they kick the field goal and they go up however many they go up, the game's probably over. And while I do get what Atlanta was doing. You know, you know, they said dance with the gal that brought you. You know, they're being aggressive. They're sticking with that offensive philosophy to pass in the situation where they pass. But once you do that, you open yourself up to a hold. And it was a pretty clear hold once they saw it. I mean, Jake Matthews got his, you know, arm basically all the way around Chris Long. So
even if the coaches are ultimately responsible for the decisions, I hold the players equally accountable for the execution and not just the hold on the left side, but how about the missed blitz pickup on the right side?
Yeah.
So, boy, there's going to be a lot to chew on there. They've already made some changes.
Yeah.
You know, Shanahan obviously off to join us in the NFC West.
Yep.
I like the timing of our respective coaching hires and the rivalry with San Francisco. There's an exciting new era of Niners-Rams coming.
I think so, too. So one last parting shot before we leave the people here on Between the Horns.
How was your vacation? What did you do? And and why did we miss you?
Why did you miss me? Nobody actually missed me.
No,
but
we
that's
missed
very
you,
nice.
But what was the vacation reason for why I was with Danny doing Rams Report?
Oh, no, I mean, it's just been a long time since I had some time off. So that was cool. No, it was good. I went back to Cleveland, saw some snow, which was fun for me. I don't mind that. The thing I did not like, though, about that, so I guess it was Monday. I mean, really big snowstorm happened in Cleveland. It was 6 to 8 inches. So school's off. So that means, like, when school's off in Cleveland, that means there was a really good amount of snow. So my mom has a plow guy that's supposed to come do the driveway and all that. So I've been out the night before, come home, and I see that the plow guys come through. I was like, great, this is fantastic. So they do it, you know, once at, you know, before, you know, 2 a.m. or whatnot, and they're supposed to come again. Dude doesn't come again in the morning. So, my mom's got a compact car, Jetta. She's trying to drive it out of the driveway. She gets stuck. So I have to come down and help shovel her out of the driveway. Me, who has now been in California for almost a year. I still have my, you know, snow boots, though. They were still in my mom's house.
I knew you had something in common with Aaron Rodgers. You shovel your own snow.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to, but it did have to happen.
How long did it take you?
Like 30 minutes or so. It was like
a good workout.
Well, it was a good workout. Yeah. But I mean, but you know, she's like halfway through the driveway and she's like, man, I just did not think that there was this much snow out there. So whoever this plow guy is, you know, you got some work to do. You got to make up for that somehow, because I should not be out there shoveling snow. That's what the money is for, as Don Draper once said.
Yeah. A little closer to home. Trust me, it does not rain this much every winter
in
Southern California.
You know, it's been funny because, you know, everything
is
not very green.
Yet?
I don't know. Maybe we are.
Close.
It's been very good. You know, everybody's saying, you know, all the reservoirs have been back up. Mm-hmm. It's been nice to see the lush green hills of Calabasas now on my drive.
Looks like Ireland, not Calabasas.
I know. So that's all good. But I think that'll be enough for today, huh, JB?
I think so. If anyone's still listening at this point, we'll join you next time.
I know, exactly. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this edition of Between the Horns. We will have more coverage of all the coaching staff changes on therams.com, wherever you may be in football. We will see you next time.